Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Week in Reviews. My name is Simon Barrett, and my mission is to talk to people in the entertainment world. My guest today has a very unique story. Richard Shenkman is a truly unique man. Richard, tell me, first off, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Simon.
Let's start at the very beginning, which is, in my opinion, a good place to start. Tell me just a little bit about yourself. I know that we crossed paths in 2007, but before we go there, just a little bit about you.
Sure. From almost as long as I can remember, all I've ever wanted to do was make movies. And, you know, these days, a kid can take an iPhone and iMovie and make a movie when they're 5 or 6 or 7 years old. When I was a kid, it wasn't so easy. You needed to understand about film and splicing with glue and if you had synchronized sound. You know, there was it was a lot more complicated. So from a young age, I took film courses and learned as much about it as I could. I got waylaid a few times over the course of my life and career. I actually started out making promos for MTV. Back when MTV first launched, and then from that I got into commercials and promotional films and music videos and fashion videos and stuff like that. And then I ended up in Los Angeles working for Playboy. And so finally, I'd been a working professional for more than 10 years before I kind of stopped and said, wait a minute, I did all this because I wanted to make feature-length movies. And so I pulled together a bunch of resources. This is obviously making a very long story short. I pulled together a bunch of resources, and I got a movie made called The Pompous of Love. And that actually did pretty well. It got acquired. It got a theatrical release. It got some great reviews. It got some festivals and stuff. And so basically, you know, what I've been trying to do ever since then, which is kind of the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, what I've been trying to do is continue to write and or direct feature films and try to make a living at it. And that's the challenge.
Now let's talk about what happened in 2007. I've got to admit that I was blown away. I do a lot of movie reviews. And, the infamous MPAA, are really, really hot and heavy on people pirating movies. But your movie got pirated, what, a week before it was due to be released? You took a somewhat different approach. Let's talk about that.
Well, first we were kind of shocked. We didn't understand what the heck was going on because our movie hadn't even come out yet, and suddenly we went from number 11 or 12,000 on the IMDb movie meter to number 11 in a week. We jumped up over 7,000%, and people were reviewing the movie, and we thought, well, what the hell is going on? So my partner Eric started poking around online, and very quickly found out that what had happened was somebody had gotten their hands on a screener, because this is, again, 2007 is another era ago, and our distributor was actually sending out DVD screeners to try to sell it to video stores and whatnot. And so somebody had gotten their hands on one of these, they had ripped it, posted it online, and word had spread very, very quickly that this was a movie that people should see. I think it was a combination of the pedigree of the writer, Jerome Bixby, the sci-fi cast, Tony Todd, John Billingsley, etc., and then I guess to some degree as well, people simply liking the movie. So everybody in this peer-to-peer file-sharing community was telling their friend, oh, you got to see this, you got to see this, and posting online at blogs about it. And very, very quickly it spread. And so, of course, the first thing was to call the distributor and say, what the hell is going on? And they started calling their lawyers and you know, trying to shut down sites. And basically, Eric and I realized very, very quickly that that was a waste of time. That, like I said in a piece recently, was digital whack-a-mole. You know, you shut down one site, another one's going to pop up. So there was no stopping it. So what Eric did was he basically reached out to the peer-to-peer community and said, said, look, you know, thank you for watching our movie. You know, please, you know, go to IMDb and give us a good rating and try to, you know, buy it and stuff. And then someone gave us an even better idea, which was reach out to people and say, okay, you downloaded the movie, you watched it, you liked it, but you know what? We still haven't even broken even on this thing. So maybe you could send us a donation. So we set up a PayPal page where people could actually make a donation, whether it was $1 or $2 or, you know, some people who shared it with a lot of their friends sent in $20, $50, $100. And people still find the page and make donations. I mean, literally a week doesn't go by that we don't get at least one or two donations. And so over the years, I think somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 people have made donations. And, you know, and it's not a lot of money, but it's a respectable amount of money, you know. But the big thing was that Eric got online and thanked people for watching the movie and sharing the movie. And he wasn't exactly saying, thank you for pirating our movie, but that's how it kind of got taken. And so that, in turn, got us a great deal more publicity because suddenly people were saying, filmmakers thank pirates. You know, that became the headline. And so that became the story.
Oh, indeed. And that was how I first, discovered the movie. Now, please don't take this the wrong way, but, you know, had it not been pirated, would it have been quite as successful as it was?
I don't think so. I think that, people needed, it's the kind of movie that people needed to see. I've been to film festivals and stuff, or I've been to screenings where I've seen a movie and I've thought, this is one of the best movies I've seen all year. And then it just bombs, it dies, it disappears, because you couldn't get people to come out of their house and go see the movie. You know, at a film festival, people are all motivated. They say, oh, what's tonight? What's tonight? What's tomorrow night? And, they're all set. The film festival has come to town, and they're going to go see a bunch of movies they never heard of. But those same people all through the rest of the year won't do that. Or certainly, even if they do, the people who aren't the kind of people who go to film festivals won't do it. And Man from Earth was certainly the kind of movie that unless it had been set up for you just perfectly, it might not have ever appeared on your radar at all. You might not have made the effort to go to a theater and see it or even necessarily to rent it. So what happened was by getting pirated and by getting passed from hand to hand to hand, there was this enormous international word of mouth spread about the movie.
Okay, let's talk about the movie itself. You set me right before we went on air. I had always assumed that it was based on a book, but I'm wrong. It's based on a screenplay by Jerome Bixby. Do you want to give us a thumbnail sketch on what the movie's about, the storyline?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I think that it's a common misconception that the movie's based on a play or based on a book. And I think that comes from how incredibly literate and articulate it is. You know, it's basically a thought piece. It's really eight people in a room talking. You know, when people have asked me to compare it to anything, I always say it's a science fiction 12 Angry Men. You know, that's really what it is. It's an impromptu goodbye party. A guy, about 35, a college professor, is packing up his stuff and leaving, and his friends show up basically saying, what? Why are you leaving? You walked out of your own goodbye party. What's going on here? And finally, after a fair amount of pressure from them, he says, you know what, I've never done this before. I'm going to give it a try. And he basically starts telling them a story that he's moving on because he's noticed in his life that that if he stays in one place for more than 10 years or so, people start to notice that he doesn't age. And that, in fact, he was born in the times of the Cro-Magnon man and that he's 14,000 years old and he's lived through millennia of human existence. And the drama comes from their disbelief. You know, is he joking? Is he crazy? Is he playing some kind of, you know, mean joke? And they pepper him with questions and they interrogate him, but he's got an answer for everything. And very soon it becomes clear that as much as he couldn't possibly prove his story verbally, neither can they disprove it. And then tensions rise as kind of two things happen. You know, number one, he starts making statements and claims that become more and more challenging to accept. And number two, he's not backing off the story. And so, you know, now here's somebody who's been your friend for 8, 9, 10 years, who you always thought was sane. And you think, okay, if he really believes this, he's either insane or he's a sick bastard, because obviously there can't possibly be a 14,000-year-old man. So tensions rise and it becomes more and more emotional until it builds to a fairly shattering climax.
What I loved about the movie, and I have to admit that I'm not a huge fan of sci-fi. You don't have spaceships. You don't have special effects. It's a sci-fi movie that is just about people. That to me was wonderful.
Yeah, that was the thing. You know, when I read you have to remember, I read this script when a year, maybe less than a year, after John Bigsby had actually died. Emerson, his son Emerson, who was a writer and a producer in his own right, was taking the script around trying to get it set up. And people were responding to how well it was written. You couldn't possibly not respond to how well it was written. But if you are the kind of person who makes, you know, fairly traditional Hollywood movies, you're looking at this and saying, well, sure, it's a great premise, but the whole movie can't be eight people in a room talking. At some point, they got to run around. There's got to be flashbacks. The CIA have to start chasing John for a sample of his blood. You know, something has to happen. And so the movie wasn't getting set up. And I read it, and I just loved it. I saw the tension. I saw the drama. I saw how compelling it was. And so while there were some, you know, some issues, and, you know, it ended up taking me more than 5 or 6 years to actually get the rights to the material, I always remembered it. I always loved it. And I was and am honored to be the guy who was able to take this script and bring it to life.
Oh, and I think you did a fabulous job. I really wish that your co-conspirator, Eric, was on the phone. You know, how did he get involved?
Eric and I met when I was trying to sell my second film. Went to Coney Island on a mission from God, be back by 5. At the time, Eric was working for a small video distributor in New York, and he liked the movie and wanted to acquire it. And so, you know, we started having conversations. In the end, his boss wouldn't let him acquire the movie because he didn't see the commercial potential. But Eric and I stayed in touch. You know, he thought I was a talented guy, and I thought he was a smart and savvy guy. Obviously very savvy, liked my movie. So we stayed in touch, and we stayed friends. And at one point, Eric sent me a script saying, you know, I want to write this movie. Can you give me some notes? And it was there was a lot of great stuff in the script, but it needed an enormous amount of work. And I said, you know, it's a really fun idea. I can give you a pile of notes, or maybe we can just collaborate on it. And he said, oh, that'd be great. And so we started collaborating on scripts. You know, different kinds of things. Usually something where he had kind of a high concept idea, and then I would help him turn it into a real script. And then and he always wanted to be a producer. He always wanted to be a guy who was getting movies made. And then one day, my friend Dean Alioto, made a movie called L.A. Dicks. And he made the movie for something like $110,000. And he shot it on a consumer camcorder, but at the time a fairly high-end one called the DVX-100 that could shoot 24 frame per second video. So that even though it was video, it kind of had a filmy look to it. And he made this low budget movie, kind of a, you know, dark comedy, and it looked great. And I was talking to Eric, and I was telling him, you know, my buddy Dean made this movie. It looked great. He cut it at home on a Final Cut. It looks like a real movie. Shot it for $110,000. It looks like a real movie. And Eric said, well, we can raise $110,000. So then we sort of became obsessed with the notion of making our own movie, that we were going to raise this kind of money and make a movie. But nothing I wrote and nothing Eric wrote was small enough to realistically make it for that kind of money. And then I remembered The Man from Earth, and Eric said, well, you know, let's contact Emerson. And Eric tracked down Emerson's number. I called Emerson. I said, I don't know if you remember me, but, and he said, remember you, you're the only director that ever wanted to make the movie the way my dad wrote it. So I said, well, if you're willing to give me the script for basically no money but a piece of the back end, I'm going to go make it. By hell or, you know, come hell or high water, I'm making this movie. And he said, I'm in. And so he gave me the script. I had when I'd met him 5 or 6 years before, I'd actually given him my notes on the script because as great as it was, you know, Jerome Bixby did not survive to do a rewrite on it. And so there were, you know, a few things that needed to be cleaned up and straightened out and so forth. And so I told him, you know, look, if you give me the thing, this is what I'm going to do with it. And he said, those are all good ideas. And so I did the rewrite. He loved it. We made the movie.
Wow. But
you know, but Eric, you know, Eric served that vital producerial function of A, kicking me in the ass to go make the movie, and B, you know, really hustling to help raise the money.
Right. So, you know, the Man from Earth.
I mean, by the way, not to undersell his creative input, you know, and his great ideas and his ongoing, his never-ending source of, you know, flow of suggestions, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I don't want to sell Eric's contribution short, you know.
Right. But, you know, it's somehow, you know, you managed to cobble together the Man from Earth. And, you know, honestly, I think it's a wonderful movie. I know that you must have spent months and months and months, you know, agonizing over, you know, how to shoot a particular scene.
Well, I'll be honest. I watched 12 Angry Men a couple of times, you know, and I stole from that as much as I possibly could. And the question became, you know, once I had the location, you know, you say you spend months and months, but you can really only do that if you're either going to build a set or if you know far in advance what your locations are going to be. Otherwise, you really have to work with what you have. And in a budget like ours, building a set was not an option. So we had to find a location. That took months, I'll tell you that. That took forever to find the location that was right and that I could afford. But I ended up with really the perfect location. And then I spent some time on the set. And then we had a full week of rehearsal, which you normally don't have on movies, and you especially don't have them on low-budget movies. We had a full week of rehearsal, and we worked out, you know, not only performance but blocking as well. So that helped us quite a bit when we shot the movie, and we were able to, you know, cover an enormous amount of material every day because we only had 8 days to shoot the whole movie.
You shot the whole movie in 8 days.
Yeah, I know. It looks pretty good, huh?
Oh, I am so impressed. You know, that was a factoid I didn't know. You know, yeah, you look at some movies and it takes them, you know, a year. Yeah, and $200 million to, you know, to fund it. But you really did that in just 8 days?
Yeah. Yeah, we really did. I mean, I might have gone back a couple of days later and shot a couple of establishing shots, you know, of the area. I think for that opening montage. But other than that, or there's one shot. I think there's a shot where it's a transition where we go outside the cabin and you see that the sun is starting to set behind the mountain. I think I did that after the fact as well. So literally three or four establishing shots I did a few days later in an hour. But other than that, we shot the movie in 8 days.
Oh, I am truly impressed. So let's move on to your new idea.
Yes.
You're going to do Man from Earth version 2?
Well, not version 2. It's not a remake. What happened was, you know, as soon as the movie took off and became successful, there was people started saying, well, what about a sequel? You know, I mean, the guy's been alive all these years. You can do anything. You can go back in time. You can have his next event. You know, you can do anything. And I thought, no, you know, that's not right. The movie is what it is. It's perfect. And then somebody approached me, and they said, you know, what you really ought to do is make a TV series. And I thought about shows that I loved, like The Fugitive and Kung Fu, you know, shows where, or even The Hulk, you know, shows where a guy has very particular reasons for needing to keep to himself, but at the same time, he's got special abilities, and he wants to help people, and he finds himself helping people. And so I was thinking, gosh, you know, John Oldman would be great for that because he's got these special abilities. He's clearly all about helping people, even though he's got some dark secrets and he's a very private person. And then I got to thinking about, yeah, but who'd be after him? You know, in the case of who'd be the bad guy? You know, like in the case of The Immortal. Remember The Immortal with Christopher George?
Mm-hmm.
It was that whole, you know, sample of his blood thing. You know, how does he live forever? We want a sample of his blood. In the case of, you know, Kung Fu, they were after Kane because he had, you know, killed the emperor's nephew. You know, and then plus he was on the search for his half brother. You know, in the case of The Fugitive, he's there after him because they think he killed his wife, and he's trying to find the one-armed man who he knows really did it. So, you know, you've got to have, even though you've got the sort of incident of the week, you've also got to have the overarching drama. And so I was thinking, okay, well, you know, who's after him? Who's the antagonist and why? And then I thought about it, and I came up with an idea for that, which I'm not going to tell you. But I came up with an idea for that excited me very, very much. And but then the TV series idea kind of never went anywhere for reasons I don't even remember. But the ideas stayed with me, and Eric, you know, has always sort of said, we really ought to do another one. You know, people really want another one. We should do another one. And then I sort of said, well, gee, I could take this idea, you know, that I had for the TV series and make that the sequel. And that's where the story came from. And the more I thought about it, the more excited I got about it. I ran it by Emerson Bixby, and he loved it. I ran it by David Lee Smith, and he loved it. And said, yeah, I want to do that. So, you know, the important people. So Eric, Emerson, David, and I were all on board. So that was kind of the team we needed at the core of this thing. And so then we started shopping it around, and nobody would give us the money. And then Kickstarter came along, and I said, oh, Kickstarter, we ought to do this on Kickstarter. But it seemed a little intimidating of a concept, and Eric was really confident that we could raise the money through more traditional means. So we sort of put that idea aside. And then another year or two went by, and nothing happened. And then finally people started raising funds for some really big movies on Kickstarter. And I said, maybe we ought to look at Kickstarter again. And that's how we ended up where we are right now, which is, you know, day five, we're on day five or six or something like that, into a Kickstarter campaign to try to raise the funds to make A Man from Earth 2.
As I recall, you're looking for, what, $175,000?
We're looking for $175,000, of which you got to figure at least $30,000 we won't get between the Kickstarter fees and then what it will cost us to fulfill the perks. So we're talking about ending up with $140,000 to $150,000 of actual production dollars. And, and whether that is enough to make the movie is a fair question. I suppose I could make a version of the movie. You know, if I'm willing to once again work for free for 6 months and all the rest of that, and make an ultra low budget movie, I suppose there's a way to make a version. But I am hoping that we will either meet and exceed the goal on Kickstarter. Or if we at least meet the goal on Kickstarter, there's also the possibility of partnering with somebody else and getting additional funds and making the movie that way.
Right. And presumably, at least the, the script is fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
And I'll be meeting with Emerson to work on it some more. And then there's actually another writer who's going to be joining me, a guy who's actually a history professor, or who is going to bring in... Because one of the things that The Man from Earth had going for it was that Jerome Bixby spent his entire life reading. You know, just all he did all the time was read thousands and thousands of books. So the sheer amount of knowledge in his head about philosophy, history, religion, was staggering. And frankly, I don't have that, and neither does Emerson. But this other guy does, and so he's going to come in to help fill out some of the, the scenes that because while the new movie will be a little bit, you know, bigger and have a little more going on in it than the first film did, it still needs to honor the structure and tone and feeling of the first film. And so at the heart of it is still the kind of debate and conversation that drove the first film.
Okay, let's do some absolutely shameless commercialization. You have a Kickstarter account. Where can people find you?
Oh, they just have to go to Kickstarter.com. That's all, KickStarter, Kickstarter.com. And they can either just search Man from Earth, or they can go, they can click on, you know, at the Kickstarter page, they can just, if they just type in Man from Earth, you know, will come up. I don't think there's anything on there that's similar. Or they can go to the film page if they want to scroll through and look. They can also search by Los Angeles. You know, the Kickstarter makes it very, very easy to find projects.
Okay, and what about websites? I happen to know where I can find you, but other people might not be quite as lucky. You know, where is the best place to find?
Well, there's lots of ways. There's manfromearth.com, which is our official website, and there's a contact us button there. That's where the PayPal link is. In other words, for people that just wanted to make pure donations, which they've been doing since 2007. We also have a Facebook page, Jerome Bixby's The Man from Earth, because the official title of the first film is Jerome Bixby's The Man from Earth. So I believe there are one or two unofficial Facebook pages floating around, which is a pain in the butt. But but if they go to Jerome Bixby's The Man from Earth, that's the official page. And what else? There's another thing. Well, of course, if people want to, you know, just contact us, like at this point, they can do that through the Kickstarter page as well. I've also got an email address, manfromearthmovie@gmail.com. So there's lots and lots of ways of getting in touch.
perfect. Now, obviously, stage one is to generate some funding. Let's say that you get funded through Kickstarter. You know, how long do you think it's going to be to make the movie and get it out there?
My goal would be to shoot in January. You know, that we would use November and December for pre-production and shoot as early as January. You know, if that turns out to be too ambitious, then, you know, then we push back a little bit. But you know, just given the budget of the movie, it's not as if we're going to have more than, you know, honestly, 15 or 20 days to shoot. Unless we go the other route, like I said, and partner with another producer and raise the budget. And in that case, you know, maybe we could get 25 or 30 days to shoot. And maybe we'd go to some other location to shoot. That's a possibility as well. But, you know, once the movie's shot, I can turn it around pretty quickly. You know, I would say there's no reason why it couldn't be out in the marketplace no more than 6 to 8 months after it's shot.
Okay. Have you, played with any of the usual studios to see if they have an interest level?
Well, I mean, yeah, but you say studios. No, I haven't brought this to studios because there's no studio that's going to want to make this movie. But we've gone to some of the independent companies, you know, for example, the company that put out the first film, and a company that puts out movies at this level. You know, we've spoken to several people, several companies that put out movies at this level, and they've all passed. I can't really explain it. You know, you look at the numbers on the first movie, and so why would they not want to do the sequel to... I mean, our movie's been seen, I don't know how many times, at Netflix. You know, you'd think Netflix would want to do it, but they passed. I mean, Netflix knows better than anybody what the market is for this movie, and yet they said, no, it's not the kind of thing we do.
Wow. That amazes me. Now, I'm not trying to put you in the corner, but how many times or how many people watched the first movie, Man from Earth?
In terms of illegal downloading, or in terms of
either one.
Well, I mean, the last I heard from someone who, for whatever set of reasons, has some inside knowledge on this stuff, the last I heard, and this was over a year ago, he told me that more than 3 million people had downloaded the movie. So I'm sure it's well over 4 million by now. I mean, millions and millions of people have seen the movie. I mean, recently, somebody posted the entire movie in HD on Vimeo. And that's just wrong. You know, that's just wrong. But anyway, they did, and in just a few weeks, I think almost 10,000 people had seen it. So,
oh, yeah.
So an enormous number of people have seen the movie. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many, but millions. I can tell you that at Netflix, it's got almost 600,000 votes, and I have to figure that not everybody who watches a movie bothers to vote. So I have to think it's probably been seen over a million times at Netflix alone.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, let's face it. You know, people, pick a movie and go, we'll try this. And, you know, 5 minutes in, they go, nah, this is boring. But, your movie is different. You know, within 5 minutes, you're captivated. I know that you can't talk about it, but can you at least give us an idea of what the Man from Earth version 2 might be about?
I can only tell you that it is very much of a piece with the first film. You know, there's a lot of talking. You know, there's a lot of talking. There's a lot of discussion. There's people having some of their most closely held beliefs challenged. There's questions of, you know, what do we owe each other, and how much impact can any of us have on other people? You know, thematically, it's very, very connected to the first film. It's not, you know, there's no car chases or anything like that. I mean, it's definitely, you know, tonally and structurally similar to the first film. You know, but it's a different setting, and it's different people, and it's a and the conflict, you know, while related to the conflicts in the first film, are new conflicts.
Richard, it sounds wonderful, and I can't wait for this to happen. I'm being bugged by my automated producer. We're, you know, we're flat out of time. Richard, thank you for you know, talking to me today. And do you have a parting comment for us?
It would only be this. First of all, as I always say, I'm extraordinarily grateful for the support that everyone has given The Man from Earth, even if that support was only just to watch it. It is amazing to me to be able to, you know, say that any film of mine has been seen by so many people. And while some people absolutely hate it, the vast majority really like it. And that is, I'm, you know, proud and humble at the same time. Having said that, if people are interested in a sequel, they've got to support the Kickstarter campaign, because believe me, I've tried other ways to get it made, and that has not happened. So if people are interested in the sequel, they have to go to the Kickstarter page and they have to support it, because it's the only way it's going to happen.
Richard, thank you so much. And I'm sure we will be talking again soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I really appreciate the support.
Oh, my pleasure. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.